This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
We're back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. I like Khalil Mullings. So that ticked me off. He didn't say tit.
Yeah, that was a nice interview.
Hey, that ticked me off. I was at the game, walking out, hearing that OHIO, and a lot of fans were like, oh, man, we're going to lose recruits off of this. It seemed to have the opposite effect on Khalil Mullings. I said, look, we're coming to beat Ohio State. You like the attitude, obviously. You got to actually do it. I get it. You know, I don't want to hear the talk crowd out there, but I like the spirit. I like that kind of fire. It's why I ask all those guys that question. You know, are you feeling Ohio State before you step foot on campus? And that clearly is a kid that feels that. Joining us on the MGo Blog Roundtable, as he does every single, or at least most weeks, when he's not traveling, Craig Ross, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm doing great. And then we got to skip across the middle because no Brian today. Brian's out sick. He played hurt last week. Yeah. But he's home nursing taking on bronchitis. So, you know, hopefully he's feeling better sooner rather than later. Brian Cook from MGo Blog. But we do have Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Sam?
Doing great. So what's going on over at the Power Rank?
It's bowl season. I have a lot of separate things. My email newsletter, if you're in a bowl pool with confidence points, I have a little cheat sheet. If you sign up for my free email newsletter, you'll get that. Makes it easier for you to fill out your confidence points in your bowl pool. And then you can actually, this is also the one time a year you can get my best predictions without becoming a member of the site. So it's the Power Rank 2019 Bowl Season Report. That's also on the site as well at thepowerrank.com.
All right. Yeah. So coming off of signing day, anything yeah. you guys wanted to touch on as far as signing day is concerned?
Three guys I'd like to talk about. I know there were some, maybe, I don't know what to call it, unhappiness, but some concern by Michigan fans about Velarde, the quarterback they just signed. So I went on and watched, and there's a lot of tape of him, actually. And he, I think, is a lot better than fans perceive. He's from Long Island. I don't know if we've had a recruit from Long Island since Jumbo Elliott, but it's been a long time. And the competition there is not very good, I would surmise. And when you watch his tape, he's the biggest guy on the field. But he also has a pretty good arm, I think. It's a strong arm. He has some touch. But the thing that stands out is he's really a good athlete. I mean, he's 6'4", maybe 220, strong as hell, and runs the ball pretty well, even if it's against bad competition. He's very effective at running the ball, and he seems to see the field. I think working on his footwork and some of his mechanics, he can become a Big Ten quarterback. I would compare him to Craig Krenzel, and I wouldn't say he's a poor man Craig Krenzel at all. I would put him right there.
You remember Michigan didn't really like look at Craig Krenzel.
Yeah, but he became a pretty good quarterback at Ohio State.
Sure did.
And I would put him in about the same timeline. I don't think he's Ben Roethlisberger. That's a bridge too far.
And Brian didn't say he was Roethlisberger. Okay. Let's be clear. He tried to qualify. He tried to qualify that statement. What he said was that when you watch him and how he maneuvers in the pocket, mm-hmm. how he can sidestep a rush a little bit, and how, you know, sometimes guys try to tackle him and they just fall off him because he's mm-hmm. such a big guy. He said, you know, he in that setting yeah. in New York against that competition. You kind of see some of that. He said, I'm not saying he's the next Roethlisberger. You just see him doing some of those right. things in the pocket.
Yeah, and I can see the comparison. Mm. But as I looked at him, the first name that popped in my head was Craig Krenzel. Mm. And I like the recruit. I mean, I think given that Michigan had to have a quarterback right. in this cycle, I know for a fact they cut up the tapes of 1,000 quarterbacks, mm-hmm. and this was one that they felt was a plausible Big Ten player, and I agree. the two guys that blew me away watching tape, and I didn't look at everyone closely, but I did look at two kids. And one was Aaron Lewis, who everyone lists as a tight or a defensive end. I don't see him as a defensive end. He's definitely a three tech. I think it's possible he could be a nose tackle, and he is terrific.
He said really quickly that he thinks there's a good chance that before all is said and done, he'll be over 280. Yeah. And at that point, he would be playing inside. So he already sees that possibility.
Well, he's 6'5", 235 right now. He's going to put weight on. And he really has great hands, which is what you're looking for on a defensive tackle. He has very quick hands. He's nice first step. I looked at him and I said, Mo Hurst. He reminds me a lot of Mo. And so... he's all over the place on the ratings. There isn't a consistent view on him, but I think he moves really well on his feet. He's fast for a defensive, he'd be very fast for a defensive tackle. I like him a lot. And the guy who absolutely blew me away is, from Brooklyn, William Mohan, who they list as a Viper. I guess he's coming in as a Viper because he's only about 195. He's got incredible closing speed. He can rush the passer. In traffic, he moves really fast. It's almost hard to believe that he moves that fast and he sees what's going on in front of him. You know, I think he might grow into a Mike. I when I look at him, I see a potential Devin Bush. His rating is ridiculously low, 465 to 700 in that range.
Brian explained that yesterday because, Brian thinks he's a four... He's a four-star college talent. Mm-hmm. And the reason why he qualified it that way is because the 24/7 ranking system is based on pro projection. So if you're talking about William Mohan as a safety, then, you're projecting him as a safety. Yeah.
Then the ratings may make sense. Mm-hmm. But when you look at him as a linebacker, either a Viper, if he's, or... From my point of view, if he puts 30 pounds on, potentially a Mike, because I like Khalil Mullings' kid as a Will, then, you really got something, I think, with this kid. I mean, because he will be able to cover well enough as a linebacker, and he's really, really quick in traffic.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that I talked about with William Mohan, is you look at the versatility of their safety / Vipers. Mm-hmm. You know, Mohan comes in as a Viper, but I could see if he adds the weight. Let's say he got as big as Kalik. And it's one of the things I said. I think he moves to linebacker. And one of the big differences, he's just a more fluid athlete. I mean, Kalik, when we watched him in high school, you saw, some of the great athletic feats and, him running and doing a flip. And, so a big physical athlete. But this guy... William Mohan is fluid. And so I think that's one of the things that as you look at him as his potential as far as coverage is concerned, you add the weight. I think that fluidity will be able to be maintained and he could be, I think he can be a real, he could be a real weapon as a linebacker if he gets big enough to move to that spot. But comes in as a Viper, as you said, just like those other guys, the three safeties come in as safety. But I think one of those guys will wind up being the Viper.
Yeah, I would agree. One of those guys will end up moving down to the Viper spot, too. Will end up. Everyone in this class seems to have an M in his name.
Right. Mohan and a Moten.
And more.
And Morant.
And Makari Page. So they all got M's. Right. In any event, but Ed walked in today with something that's worth talking about. And that's. I didn't know this. The KJ Costello has apparently gone to the transfer portal.
I just saw it as I opened up my computer this morning.
What's going on at Stanford?
They're not very good at football.
Where the whole team is getting in the transfer portal?
I mean, there's something wrong.
I'm not just talking about guys. I'm talking about guys that were starters.
Right. Well, I mean, they had a lot of injuries. They had a bad season. The third string quarterback couldn't do anything. I don't know. Personally, I mean, I don't know what the situation is, but it can't be good if everyone's in the transfer portal.
So tell me this. Was KJ Costello, had he come back, was he definitely going to be a starter for Stanford next year?
Yes. I've always been a fan. Ever since I saw this kid throw as a freshman, he started the last three or four games. I was like, this guy's the real deal.
And Michigan.
We saw it in 2018. They were seventh in the nation when I look at adjusted yards per pass attempt. He had a lot of talent at receiver then. He was hurt this year. The kid can play.
He has a
I mean, he's an NFL talent, and I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I thought he would go to the draft this year, but obviously, you know, his stock isn't high enough after being hurt. Always liked the kid.
Michigan loved him too. He was at the top, I believe, right at the very top of Michigan quarterback board during out of high school. Is that right, Sam?
Yeah, he's an arm talent. He was up there for sure.
He was absolutely at or near the top.
How do you think he would fit in this offense?
Perfectly.
See, I can't say that I've watched KJ. I've watched enough Stanford to really have an opinion on, you know, an informed opinion on his growth
sure.
as a quarterback in college. So, do you think he would come in and be able to be the guy? Because look, wherever he goes, let's be clear, wherever KJ Costello goes,
he's starting. Yep,
and that's got to be his criteria,
yeah. right?
And so,
but someone, I mean, someone's going to take him as a starter.
No doubt. Absolutely. But the question is, should Michigan do that?
Yes.
Especially when you consider that this probably compromises your depth.
Yep. It does.
It at least becomes a question.
It does. It absolutely does. There's no doubt about that.
You have to ask the guys that are duking it out for the position. Are they going to stay, or are some of those guys going to hit the portal?
Here's a question: Does I mean, if Michigan passes on Costello for reasons that are legitimate, like they got McCaffrey and Milton fighting over a position, and it isn't perhaps fair or reasonable for them? I mean, does he end up at Wisconsin?
Don't say that.
Well, why not? Does he end up at Iowa? I mean,
Iowa's probably better land. I don't know who they have behind what's his face,
Stanley.
I mean, does Iowa or Wisconsin
really
care?
Wisconsin has Graham Mertz being groomed.
Right.
But do they really care? I mean, Mertz can be groomed for another year. And so if do you want to play Wisconsin with KJ Costello at quarterback?
No.
Me neither.
No.
And so I don't know. I mean, about, I mean, Ohio State ain't taking them. We know that
right,
one.
Right, right.
What about Penn State?
I mean, Clifford had a pretty good year. I don't think they're.
Right, if you were Penn State, would you take KJ Costello in a freaking heartbeat? They tell Clifford, "Sorry, dude, you got to have to wait." And I don't want to play Penn State with KJ Costello.
You're basically saying you don't want to play anyone with KJ Costello.
I might want to play Stanford with KJ Costello, but I don't know if I want to play the other Big Ten schools who aren't great at quarterback right now, and you put Costello there, all of a sudden they look like a different team.
So you'll play Maryland with KJ Costello? Is that what you're saying?
Maybe, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Joshy is still there. Yeah, they'll be better.
I don't know. That's a mind blower to me. I mean, I hadn't considered or thought about this at all.
Yeah, it struck me immediately that first, how odd is it? What's going on at Stanford that he would hit the portal? And then
kind of you. That was your first thought, Sam. and then, not like, hey, how can we get Michigan better?
I know. Yeah, my first thought was, what the hell is going on at Stanford? But then it is intriguing because you got a guy. I mean, there's just no substitute for experience. There's just no substitute for experience. He is a tremendous arm talent, and that is intriguing, too. So you got a guy that's gonna come in and be ready for the magnitude of the moment. He's played in big games. He's performed well in some big games, to boot. And he already had an affinity for Michigan. There are some clear lures there.
Yeah, where's
that
he
make
from?
That make this make sense. But let me see what school he went to real quick.
I thought he was from California.
Yeah, I'm gonna see what school it was though, because I cannot remember what school KJ Costello went to. So I'll pull that up now. But it's intriguing. I think if you're Michigan, if you ultimately decide not to do it, fine. I mean,
right.
But yeah. I think it's something that you gotta look at.
You have to think about it.
You gotta think about it, and see, and then go from there. Rancho Santa Margarita, and he went to Santa Margarita Catholic in California.
That's where Brian is right now.
Southern?
He's drinking a lot of Rancho Margaritas.
I don't know. I don't have Ira. You spent time in Cali. Where is Rancho Santa Margarita?
You know, California's a really big state.
I thought maybe you.
It sounds like Southern California.
I thought maybe you knew, man. But yeah, I think you got to take a look at it. It's intriguing.
I mean, Harbaugh has never been shy about upgrading his talent at quarterback. I mean, he got rid of, you know, he...
Yeah, Southern, it's east of Huntington Beach. It's near Mission Viejo. It's so it's like east of Irvine and east of Long Beach, southeast of L.A.
Okay.
You know, Harbaugh had no problems promoting Kaepernick.
Yeah, but you know what? But I think that, you know, I could understand being a little measured in your approach here. You know, it, all things being equal, if you didn't have to, if you didn't also have to think about losing guys in your ranks that you've been cultivating, then maybe you would do it. If it wasn't a situation where a guy was coming in with the expectation that he said, and you know, I mean, I haven't talked to KJ Costello, so this is part of this is just speculation on my part, but I think it's reasonable speculation that if you're leaving a sure, you just said, if KJ Costello stays at Stanford, he's the starter next year, right?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure about that. Davis Mills is good, but I don't think he's as good as KJ Costello. That doesn't mean that's what David Shaw thinks, because we've seen some poor quarterback assessments from the man.
Yeah, okay. Well, I just, but assuming that that's the case, I mean, to leave a spot that is yours, and if it's about improving your stock, that being another, you got to play to improve your stock. So those two things suggest wherever he goes, he expects to start. So, you know, if you're, you know, Jim Harbaugh, if you're Michigan and you're looking at that, you know that. That puts your depth at risk.
It puts Michigan in an impossible bind to some extent. I think Ira said this off air. You know, it in some context, it really doesn't make sense for Michigan. On the other hand, I just hate to see him at Wisconsin or Iowa or Penn State.
So you're playing the blocking game.
Yeah.
I mean, keep him from your competition.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've seen enough from McCaffrey that I'd like to see the guy get snaps every game. I would have liked to have seen that this year, just with his running ability alone. I think his passing ability is solid, maybe better if he got more attempts. But I mean, I think Costello would win the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. Well, time will tell. Time will tell on that. You know, it'll be interesting to see what schools KJ Costello comes out and talks about having interest in.
MSU needs a quarterback.
You know, I somehow don't see that one happening.
What if?
I try to keep as straight a face as possible when I said it.
What if, though? I mean, what if he wound up at Michigan State? I mean, they have...
Aren't they losing all their key players on defense the next year?
You know, Lewerke's gone. I don't think there's any...
I assume KJ Costello is listening, and there's no way he can beat out Rocky Lombardi. He just doesn't have the ability.
Yeah, basically, as long as he doesn't wind up in the Big Ten, you're fine, right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah, I hear you. So. All right, we need to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side and get into some basketball. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the Amden studio. So switching gears to basketball a bit, guys, mm-hmm. And the last time we were here, I think we were talking. It was on the heels of the Illinois loss.
Yeah.
Since then, they went on to play Oregon, of course. Fell into a 16-point hole in the first half. Battled back. Lost in overtime by one. And so a two-game losing streak. Losing three of the last four. A little adversity. I don't think this is a panic time. No. I don't find myself feeling like, oh my God. See, you know, the sudden rise in the rankings wasn't deserved. This team is just on a hot streak. I think this team is better than we've seen them show here over the last couple of games. I think they have they're still finding out some things. Like, and see if you're with me on this, one of the things that stuck out to me is Michigan was going through their offensive doldrums in the first half against Oregon. I said, look, man, they need to go. They need to get Dave in the game just to give them that instant pop off the bench that they've been getting. And they didn't go to him until the 10:35 mark. And when he got in the game,
He stabilized him.
He scored 12 of their 23 first half points. And I just feel like for them, you know, a team that might have some issues with scoring droughts until in their starting lineup, until Franz really gets rolling, I think going to Dave a little bit earlier in some of these games might be, you know, a partial remedy to that.
Yeah, I'd like, if I could, just look at the macro picture a little bit. You know, Michigan has played now 7 games in a row against top 46 teams. And I don't know if any major college team has ever done that.
Mm-hmm.
And of those 7 games, 3 were at neutral sites and 2 were on the road. And they've played 8 teams in the top 50 this year, counting Creighton. And 5 of those 8 games were with not Big Ten refs. Compare that to Michigan State, who has a reputation, and to some extent, it's justified, of being a team that's willing to go out and play tough games in the preseason. Well, this year they played 3 teams in the top 50 versus Michigan's 8. 1 at home, 1 on the road, 1 neutral, all 3 with Big Ten refs. Michigan has played the toughest schedule in the country of teams that are actually players so far.
Mm-hmm.
And really, they've acquitted themselves on the big picture
pretty well.
Pretty well.
Yeah.
And so now in the going to the Oregon game, you're right. I mean, we just came out. We shot 7 of 29 in the first half.
And got good looks.
Yeah, and they were not bad looks. In fact, they were as good a looks as Oregon got. I've watched this game 4 times now. It's a fascinating
game. I'd say better looks than Oregon got, frankly.
Oregon put up 4 shots at the buzzer that were prayers, and all of them went in, including one that hit the back rim twice and the backboard once and the front rim. And, you know, so there's some randomness in all games, whether a shot goes in or a shot goes out. And in this game, it seemed to be more profound than ordinary. But I agree with you that, I mean, we've got 3 players at this point coming along.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and at various, you know, DDJ definitely. I mean, you, I know all last season, Sam, over and over, especially when we were off air, was saying, this guy is going to come through. He's a good player. And I said, yeah, he is. I hope, but he hasn't shown it so far.
Yeah, I guess my argument last year, and this is not being revisionist, I said it when John Beilein was here. Mm-hmm. It was not my opinion. I don't think that I know more than, obviously don't know more than John Beilein when he says the kid isn't ready.
Yeah.
He's not ready. So I get that. I wasn't arguing that. My argument was getting him ready. How do you get him ready?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is there an argument to be made for playing him and allowing him to play through those mistakes to get him ready? And how will that serve you? How much will that serve you in the future? You know, is it, as long as he's not costing you games, it might be frustrating to see him make these mistakes on the court. But if he isn't costing you the game, he's just, you know, costing you some possessions here or there, making it maybe a little more difficult. But you're still winning. If you can get him some experience in that kind of scenario, I say get him some experience, because he has an element that, you know, is not in great supply on this roster, and is in less supply on this roster. Craig, you just don't have a lot of guys that can go get their own offense. And that was clear in the Oregon game in the first half. And as soon as Dave comes in, I'm not like he's, one, and he's going to be going to the NBA at the end of the year. But on this roster, he's one of the few guys that is capable of really, really hitting his stride offensively, quick, fast, and in a hurry, getting his own offense, 12 to 23 points in the first half.
Yeah, and I think he's adjusting to the college game, because you guys always talked about how he took a lot of pull-up jump shots in high school.
Yep.
And that's not happening at the college level. He's getting his threes. He's making them. He's getting to the basket a little bit, getting some of those runners. I just don't feel like that's the same guy that you guys were telling me about when he was in high school, which is fine. You know, you got to develop. You got to know what you can do within a system and within the higher athleticism of the game. I'm a big fan of that. Just one thing that I've been fascinated with all year is, like, what is the fingerprint of a Juwan Howard team? We've talked about how the shooting has been fantastic. I look at 2-point field goal percentage, and I adjust for opponent, and they're 4th in the nation. And for a while, that was the only thing they were doing well on offense in terms of the other 4 factors, rebounding, getting to the line, and turnovers. They were turning the ball over a lot. Turnover numbers are a lot better. They're 81st in the nation. And that's after schedule adjustments. They're a little bit higher in KenPom. So we're seeing them kind of figure each other out a little bit. I think at the beginning of the year, you know, it wasn't like, you could never press a John Beilein team because they just took care of the ball. And I feel like I get the same feeling with this team as well. That, like, they take care of the ball. And they were getting those turnovers because they were trying to make great passes. Xavier Simpson in particular. I think you're seeing a little bit less of that I think that's a good sign as well. And on the defensive side, like, you're seeing a lot of the same fingerprint from John Beilein. They are, at least the last 2 years of Beilein. You are not allowed to shoot three-pointers on this team. I mean, I still remember.
They did a better job in the second half against Oregon.
Right.
Now, Oregon, they made a few with the hands in their faces, but they made it a point to take away. What's the guy's name that's Peyton Pritchard's his friend on the team? His sidekick on the
Mitchell?
No, the other
Mathis?
Dude.
Mathis.
Yes, that guy.
He was 6 of 10.
Yeah.
And you know, a couple of the six were checked and from deep. Yeah. I mean, the killer in this game, or the killing play in this game, was my boy Eli, who I love, trying to go around his back in a double team.
Yep.
And we're up two at that point. I mean, Michigan had a 41-20 run in this game. Who loses a game with a 41-20 run?
Those are the breaks, too. And Xavier Simpson, if they play Oregon again, I guarantee you Xavier Simpson's defense is going to be better against Pritchard.
Well, I think maybe they give him some help.
His defense will be better.
I mean, isn't that really a fair question in the game? I mean, Pritchard has 8 points with 5 minutes to go, or four minutes to go in regulation. He was 2 of 7 in the first half. One was a brick that went in. In the second half, he made a couple baskets, but hadn't really been a profound part of the game, at least from a scoring point of view. He's a phenomenal player. He's a very fine player. And then with the 4 minute mark, Teske's out of the game. Now Pritchard scores 15 points in the last 9 minutes of the game because Teske never came back into the game in overtime.
Yeah, we need to talk about that too.
Yeah. See, but I think it's less to do with
and how Brandon Johns was playing.
Yeah,
he was playing well.
I think it's not a matter of Teske as much as it is a matter of they decided we aren't going to help. So even if you leave Teske in the game and you're like, and you say, look, we're playing them straight up, we aren't helping, what are you going to do? And so what you're saying, and I understand the logic of it, what you're saying is I got an all Big Ten defender, national defensive player of the year semifinalist.
Who hasn't had trouble with the guy in the game so far.
Right. He's going to slow this guy down.
Right.
At some point, we're going to play him straight up. You know, don't help off three-point shooters. Right. Guys, don't worry about trying to come over and helping on dribble penetration. Box your guys out. We aren't giving up any offensive rebounds. Mm-hmm. That's the thought process there, which obviously didn't work.
It didn't work, but it's not illogical or unreasonable or anything else. And in fact, my one coaching criticism in the game, I have one, and it's not taking Teske out or that part of it. My one coaching criticism is how we played the last 34 seconds, and I didn't understand why, with the ball down one, we ran 15 seconds a clock for no apparent reason before we got into an offense, and as opposed to taking the first available shot and then fouling, giving ourselves two chances. Now, it didn't work out badly in some sense because the ball rolled out of bounds and we ended up getting a couple more shots. But if one of those shots goes in and Michigan wins the game, we talk about how brilliant this is.
Yeah, my thing was the inbounds pass going in the backcourt was just, I mean...
That was the second. That one I'm less critical of because that's just sort of a player thing. You got to get the ball inbounds. That's a hard place to inbound.
One of the things that Tim McCormick said about it, and you can check it out on the podcast, is that you got to screen for X there to free him up so he doesn't have to run all the way back to the three. You don't have to throw the ball all the way back to the three-point line to get the ball in, because there's 10 seconds left in the game.
Yeah,
right. So now once you cross the half-court line, it's whatever play he had drawn up.
It's gone.
Is gone now. Right. You just got to go make a play.
Right. But to me, they would have avoided all that if they would have attacked the basket in the first place as opposed to pissing away 15 seconds for no apparent reason that I can think of on their first possession. But other than that, I've got no... coaching criticisms. You know, well, I have a question for you guys, but go ahead, Ed.
I was just going to say, I mean, when you look at what Juwan Howard has done in a short amount of time here, you see two players, Eli Brooks and Brandon Johns, that have improved significantly since the man got here. Yep. I think that is a great sign.
Yeah, I think so.
And
too.
When we see the equivalent improvement in Franz Wagner, who I feel has the highest upside of any player on this team, this is going to be a pretty scary team. This might not be the end of this season. It might be the beginning of next year, whenever that might be.
Well, hopefully this is Franz rounding into form. Two of the last three games, he has been.
I mean, that's
he has been a stud and really came on in the second half versus Oregon. So hopefully that carries over and he can, you know, he can be, you know, what we expected him to be. I don't want him to say two games that means you hit your stride. Hopefully this he can be consistent with this moving forward, because it really changes things dramatically for them. If right. now early in games, let's get it to France.
Exactly.
You know, just like, you know, right. early in games right now, they start out games, let's try to pound it to Teske. They don't necessarily stay with it, but that is a stated, you know, that's an initiative of theirs. I think if Franz really keeps it up, now you start out games saying, we're running some stuff to get Franz going right now. But just real quick, one of you guys, you know, you highlighted Brandon Johns. You're like, man, I like what I think. One of you compared him to Rodman. I know you aren't saying he's going to be Dennis Rodman.
Did I say Rodman?
But I get it. One of you guys. But yeah. I get it. I mean, think about it. He played two fewer minutes than John Teske in the game. He scored more points. He had more rebounds. He had, you know, I think he finished ahead in the steal column, and he had one more block than John Teske and two fewer minutes in that game. You're just feeling that guy's presence. He missed two free throws.
But
that's
he was 4-6.
But he was 4-6 in the game, but the two free throws he missed were consequential.
Were big.
They were late. But he was there for the offensive rebound mm-hmm. at the very end. It just didn't fall down.
You know, I love what I'm seeing out of Brandon Johns. I like this high school game. I've been waiting for him to come along. I thought last year when he played the five, it wasn't good, but he was not bad really at the five in this game. But here's my radical idea. There were six possessions in this game where Livers ended up on Pritchard. Livers shut Pritchard down. He was 0-6.
Yeah.
And so my question, I mean, and
good point.
And I wonder about the following lineup. X, Livers at the two, Franz, Johns, and Teske.
Or do you?
And that's a big lineup, and it's got more shooting.
Or at the very least, as Pritchard's going off later in the game, do you switch him off? Because one of the things I said is, If this was last year and Charles Matthews was around and
you put Charles on him,
you just put Charles on him.
Charles was our best. I mean, people don't believe it, but Charles was our best defender last year.
Yeah, so
and you believe that.
Yeah, and Charles was a hellacious defensive player.
Let's go to the phones real quick. Yeah. Jake in Ann Arbor. Jake, what's up?
I am pumped out. We are just two awesome days till the Michigan's next basketball game. We are 13 awesome days till the Michigan's next football game against Alabama. And all I got to say, too, is I think Michigan basketball is going to bump back. I think Michigan football is going to – I'm going out on a bold prediction. I think they're going to beat Alabama. One game, one play, one moment in time. I'll hang up and listen to Blue Windows. I'll hang up and listen to Blue.
Be sure to check out the Michigan Insider Basketball Podcast with Tim McCormick. He goes over some of the strategies that he would employ coming off of this latest loss. But no panic. Great perspective from him on where the team is at this point in time. Also, an interesting conversation he had with John Beilein about the team. So check that out, the Michigan Insider Basketball Podcast, wherever you get podcasts.